Welcome to Marketing Thought Leadership, the podcast that offers insightful discussions on thought-provoking marketing topics. Here's the host of our show, marketing consultant, speaker, author, and educator, and the president of L2M Associates, Linda Popke.
Hi, this is Linda Popke, and welcome to our latest episode of Marketing Thought Leadership. We're here today with Rebecca Fries. She is a workplace crusader who helps organizations transform outdated practices into market-leading cultures. She's an experienced consultant in organizational transformation and change management, and she's got more than 20 years of experience with large-scale Fortune 500, multi-million-dollar projects, and also startup clients. She's been on both sides of the recruitment table. She's inspired executives to chart a new course, and she's climbed both the metaphorical mountains and the actual Mount Shasta. And now she's on a mission to make organizations better places. And she is the author of the book, The Good Culture, The Leader's Guide to Creating a Workplace That Doesn't Suck. So welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me, Linda.
So I have to ask you, good culture. I mean, we hear about culture all the time, you know, culture, you know, everything else for lunch and whatever. But what is a good culture in Silicon Valley? You know, we have ping pong tables and kombucha on tap and free massages before COVID. But is that a good culture? What is a good culture, really?
Right. Oh, it's such a good question. And obviously, that's something that we get asked all the time. I mean, the first thing I think we have to define is what is culture to begin with. And I think that is, like many words that are thrown around out there, something that, you know, there's not a lot of alignment on. And we look at culture as simply the way that work gets done. So if you think about when you walk into an organization or you're working with people from an organization, it's like how they actually do the work is where you see all of those things pop up, you know, whether it's their values or their work habits, their behaviors, the way they work together, all those things that inform what a culture is, right? So first and foremost, if you kind of have your arms around, okay, that's what culture is, the way that work gets done, then you talk about, well, what is a good culture then? And I do think that, to your point, there's a lot of people that think, oh, a good culture is just something that's super fun and they have all these perks and all these things that, you know, millennials want or whatever it is that they say, right? And the fact of the matter is there's no one definition of what a good culture looks like. What we say is that a good culture is one that aligns with your business strategy and actually enables you to create a workplace in which your people can thrive and they can do the work that's aligned with the purpose of your company. So a bad culture is one in which you are working in a way that doesn't support your strategy, that doesn't support what you're trying to do, that doesn't support your purpose. So there can be lots of different types of good cultures, if you will, because it depends on the type of work that you're trying to do at your organization and what your purpose is.
So, you know, I have to ask you this because here we are in the middle of COVID and the way we work has been totally turned upside down. So most of us are working from home. We're not interacting with the people that we may have seen in person. We're not having group meetings. We're not traveling to customers or clients interacting. What has this done to culture and how do you build a good culture in this type of strange environment?
Yeah, it's such a good question and it's something that every organization is either struggling with or should be struggling with, right? Thinking about how do we kind of keep our culture going now that we don't have those physical attributions to really encourage and nudge a culture in the way that we want to nudge it. So the thing is, you have a culture no matter what. I mean, it's funny because people are like, oh, we don't need to worry about culture. Well, you do because there's a culture no matter what, whether or not you're in an office, outside of an office, whether you're distributed, whether you're all working together. There's a culture there, right? Your organization has a culture. And again, getting back to the definition, it's the way that work gets done. So what organizations need to think about is if we defined our culture in a certain manner, let's say, you know, we have this set of values and we have this purpose and the way that that shows up is X, Y, Z. And some of those things were physical, right? So let me use an example of, like, say we had a culture that was centered around transparency and, you know, the way that that showed up when we were physically in an office together was our leaders would do walk arounds and they would make sure they were mm-hmm. checking in on people. They were, you know, they were accessible to people. They would do all hands every Monday where everybody could see them and talk to them and ask questions. So you have to think about, all right, if we still believe that transparency is a deep part of our culture, how can we make that manifest in a distributed workforce? So you have to think about those things that were nudging your culture in the way you wanted it to before, and if those are now gone, how can you replace that? And you have to be really intentional and thoughtful about that, because if not, it starts to kind of, you know, break at the seams, right? People start to feel like, okay, I don't have that anymore, reinforcing this stuff, so therefore I'm going to doubt it. And question it and not be aligned anymore, et cetera. So, you know, examples for that case would be, okay, we can't physically be walking around together, but I can schedule one-on-ones. I can do random check-ins with people as a leader. I can just call people up on the phone. I can, you know, let people in on our leadership meetings to listen in so that they can see how decisions are getting made, right? And frankly, in that scenario, a distributed workforce has enabled even more transparency because we're able to be in places that we physically couldn't have been in before. It's kind of opened up our ability to access, you know, people, because everyone's at home, right? Everyone is
right.
This way. So why not, you know, just open everything up to everyone at this point? So that's just an example of it, but it's about the thinking of, okay, what are we about, and how is that manifesting in a physical workplace that's not happening anymore, and how can we replace that and even enhance it in some ways?
Right. Yeah, I've found that, for example, an association I run, we've been able to have virtual meetings and virtual events that involve people in all over the globe, which we could not have done had we had it.
You wouldn't have thought about it before.
Exactly.
Exactly. And that,
exactly.
There's these silver linings. Small one for me is my book officially launched last week, and my colleagues, my co-founder, and my teammates threw a surprise Zoom launch party for me. And it's so cool. From all over my work life. I mean, that would have never happened. I would have organized some physical party book launch, and it would have been whoever is around here that could attend. And I was able to hear from people on the East Coast, the West Coast. I had people from Europe on there, like clients. I had people from Canada. It was phenomenal. And that wouldn't have happened if we weren't in this crazy situation that we're in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We've got to look for what's good as well as what's crazy out there.
Exactly.
So tell me, you talk about skills like empathy and resilience and innovation.
Yeah.
Why are they so important to culture building?
It's such an important question, and I know that you have had one of my colleagues and friends also on your podcast, Maria Ross, who wrote The Empathy
Yes,
Edge.
Absolutely, yeah.
We talk about she's a brand expert. We talk about how culture and brand are two sides of the same coin when it comes to organizations, and an underpinning of that is a leader's ability and people's ability to have empathy. I mean, I feel like this is one of those things that we all kind of know. You know, we need empathy, we need resilience, we need to be thinking differently, you know, be innovative about stuff. We all kind of know that inherently, but the thing is, we're not really talking about how to action that with our leaders and our organizations. And these are the things that are truly the skills, and we call them real skills, right? That instead of these soft skills, actually they're real.
Right.
That are going to, you know, propel leaders and organizations forward in the future. You know, technology, all these hard skills, all the technical skills that we've been trained, even like management techniques in the past that have been kind of categorized as like the standard skill set. You know, yes,
mm-hmm.
have to have those. It's kind of table stakes. But when you think about how things are changing so quickly and how leaders today need to be able to work in this, you know, VUCA world or whatever you want to call it, and then you add on something like a global pandemic, you add on, you know, social justice issues, you add on all these things, like we have to dig much deeper in order to be leaders that can actually lead people, not just think about systems and technology and organizations and make decisions around that, right? So what do you need to actually lead people? You need to be empathetic. You need to understand people's levels of resilience and how to bolster them and how to lead with those skills in order to actually meet the demands of the world today, right, and be able to create a culture and an environment in which your people can thrive.
Absolutely. So I'm going to kind of get into something that could be a little bit controversial, but we just had an election, and we have a presidential elect who is very, very different and from our current president. And as I look at and think about the words that you use here, empathy, resilience, and innovation, I think that those all fit in his category, which may not have fit in the predecessor's category. So we have a culture in Washington, and that translates to a culture throughout the country. How do you see this changing with the new administration coming in and what's going to happen? How do you change a culture of something so big as a government?
Oh, wow. I've had people say that I need to make a trip to the White House over the years, right? It work on the culture. Because here's the deal. Like any organization, really, it starts from the top. And in my book, I talk about that. That it's not to say that there's no hope for you as an individual leader with your own team, et cetera. Like, absolutely, there are things you can do to create your own team culture, your own whatever. But when it comes to a full organization culture, and in this case, we're talking about the country, it really does start from the top, setting the tone, setting the behaviors, setting the role modeling that we need to see in order to move forward, correct? So first and foremost, people are holding their breath. You'd probably agree. They're all kind of waiting to see, okay, so how is he going to do this, right? Like how are they going to lead with empathy, really listen to both sides of the aisle, you know, really bring our country back together. And that all comes from actions and behaviors. There's nothing more powerful than the, what I call proof points, right, of a leader. They can talk all they want about what they believe in and what they think to be true. And to me, that's like, you know, painting value statements on a wall of your organization, right? Like, great, that's great. Like, show me. And so what I get to is so once you're clear on what it is you're wanting to do, what your purpose is, clear on your values, and so, you know, this translates from both an organization to a government to a country, right? We're clear on who we want to be, then what are the actions, the essential actions that we need to take in order to make that stand up? And it's funny, as I'm saying this right now, like what I talk about in the book is really like you got to think about who you're recruiting. And what's he doing right now, right? He's putting his cabinet together. He's appointing people to certain positions. And you're seeing people say, ooh, proof point, he is going to do this. Or, hey, not proof point, he just appointed this person who believes in XYZ, right? And so that's interesting because all of those appointments are either going to be a plus up or a plus down, right? On what they're doing. And then the other piece is like really like the onboarding and the really getting into the development. To me, that's the like, okay, so now we're getting, when you come from a government standpoint, okay, everybody's here, how are we going to operate together? How are we going to behave? How are decisions going to get made? You know, if we say we're this, like how is this actually going to happen? And again, that's going to be the proof point to the rest of the country to say whether or not what they put on the wall, you know, what they said in their speeches and why we elected them, if that's true or not, right? So those proof points are so important, but you can't get to the actions until you have clarity on what you want to be and what you're about. And so that's why that's the most essential first thing to do is clarity of purpose. I feel like they've been very clear about their purpose, what they want to do with this administration. Now it's going to be down to, okay, how are they enabling that?
That's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. Time will tell, and we're going to have to see. And obviously, all the best intentions don't always come through. But hopefully we will see, starting with a clear purpose, we'll see some good things happen.
Right, I mean, he's got huge blockers, right? Like, and including potentially a Senate that, you know, will fight against some of the things that they're trying to put forward. But intention is very powerful, and you know, even the effort to do those things will start to gain trust from people who may be really on the fence right now. And so that translates to any leadership in you know, organizations too. It's like, you know, your actions, you might not win. It might not work, but the fact that you're trying and that you're getting out there and you're putting, you're actually putting your name behind things to prove that you believe in it is very powerful, even if it doesn't work the first time or the second time or the third time, right? That intention is actually a very powerful thing.
I think that's really important that it's not every, sometimes we think if we don't make something happen the first time, we failed, but we haven't.
We give it up.
Our intentions and we get out there. Absolutely. So we talk about coming from the top, which I agree with you 100%, but what if I'm somewhere in the middle or the bottom of an organization? How do I make things happen? How can I be innovative? How can I make some of this, you know, this empathy, resilience, other factors?
Yeah.
How do I make that better?
If you think back to what we know to be true about why somebody leaves a job, who is it?
People leave their managers. They don't leave the company, they leave managers.
Exactly.
Right?
So I say to anybody who leads anybody, you know, whether it's one person or even if you're a kind of a peer leader, right, like you have such an incredible amount of influence on somebody's day-to-day work. Such an incredible amount of influence. You can create a working culture within that sphere of influence, and that's an incredibly powerful thing. You know, they talk about how, like, a parallel thing is when somebody smiles at you, the impact that it has, right? And there's, like, this contagious fact. And I believe the same thing about culture. So I believe that if you believe this to be true, throwing your arms up in the air and saying, forget it, leadership doesn't believe in it, so why am I going to do anything is you know, it's kind of sad. It's like
right.
People don't believe in their own level of influence. Everybody has such an incredible ability to influence their own day-to-day and the people around them. So, you know, so for me, it's like thinking about these things on a micro level is very powerful. So, you know, in the book, I talk about organizations and leaders of organizations, but you can easily say, hey, so for me, what is my purpose? Am I clear on that? What are my values? Am I clear on that? How am I going to have that show up every day with my team? And what are the things that I'm going to put in place in order to make that show up and have us all be aligned and working together? How am I recruiting people to be part of that and be on the same page with me? You know, and it's incredibly powerful. And then you can very much see how you can start a grassroots effort to start to change a culture of an organization. It's much harder when you have to do it from that level up versus somebody at the top, you know, being able to really kind of set the stage. But it's not impossible.
So you bring up an interesting point, which is if I'm clear on my intentions and what I want to do and how I want to influence people, and the general bigger organization doesn't support that, what happens and when do I get to a point where I say, hey, I can't change the culture, I need to move on? Because I think instead of leaving managers, people really leave cultures that they don't feel comfortable in.
I think it's both, honestly. I think their day-to-day is the manager, right? And that's probably what they would point to. But generally speaking, that manager is operating under a culture that rewards or incentivizes certain behaviors, right? And so therefore, you can't disconnect the two things, right?
Right?
If that manager is allowed to manage in that way, that is because of the culture. That is because of what has been allowed in that culture. So I truly can't disconnect the two because there are sometimes the odd manager that is actually acting out of the value system that you ended up unlucky enough to be reporting to, right? I have definitely had that in my career. And so sometimes you can see like, okay, how can I exit just this manager and get to another place in the organization because I believe in the organization, right? That does happen, absolutely. But if it's more of a widespread, you know, this is just how people operate here and I am not aligning with this, then yeah, I think that is absolutely a point in time where you have to consider, is it worth it for me to be, you know, unmotivated? We talk about the engagement metrics that Gallup puts out every year, and every year I kind of hold my breath and hope they're getting better, and they're not. They're
right.
Not getting better. People are incredibly disengaged at work, and that is because they are not aligned. They are not aligned with the purpose. They are not understanding like why they are there. There's a disconnect between people, you know, being in these jobs and being engaged in the work to be done and aligned with what the company is trying to do. So there is a stat that came out, you know, beyond salary, like base level salaries, right? Millennials, one of the number one things for them to make a decision about a job or even leave a job is culture. You know, is this the right culture for me? Is it a culture fit for me? And I like to say, again, back to the whole like definition of good culture, there's no one good culture. Catherine Minshew, the CEO of The Muse, she profiles companies on her website, which is a job website, and she talks about how it's kind of like dating, right? Like this guy could be a perfectly perfect guy for you, but perfectly good guy, period, but not for you, right? And
right.
So it could be a perfectly good match for somebody else. So there is this thing about culture fit, like aligning with the company's purpose and values and the way work gets done that people really need to consider when they're looking at a job. And then when you're in it and you're not happy, you need to think about, like, well, what is it exactly that is misaligned? And if this is something that is ubiquitous in the organization, like, I can't change it. Like, they are clear and aligned and they're doing their thing and I'm not aligned with it, then, yeah, then that's the time to really evaluate whether or not you should be there, because it's going to be very hard for you to be happy in a place where you are not aligned with that culture.
That's excellent advice. We're talking to Rebecca Fries. She is the author of the book, The Good Culture, The Leader's Guide to Creating a Workplace That Doesn't Suck. Rebecca, if people want to find out more about you and the book, where would they go?
Oh, thank you so much. So the book can be found at thegoodculturebook.com, thegoodculturebook.com, all one word. And you can find me on LinkedIn, so it's Rebecca Fries, F-R-I-E-S-E, or you can email me anytime. I love to hear from people. It's Rebecca@FlynnConsulting.com, FlynnConsulting.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook and all the other things. So you can find me anywhere.
Great. So given we're here in this, one last thing, because we could talk about this forever, but we're here in this distributed and, you know, kind of isolated culture with what's going on with the virus, the pandemic, and even if the vaccine is wonderful, as they're saying now, it's not going to turn things around overnight, so we may have 3, 6, 9 months more of this. What
right.
is the one piece of advice we should leave people with as to how they can positively impact the culture they're working with, given where we are today?
I love that. The first thing that came to mind for me was just reach out and ask how you are. Like, asking how somebody is going to be our biggest gift moving forward. It's leading with empathy. It's opening up transparency and trust. And it allows for conversations that potentially aren't being had anymore because we're not in these physical workspaces where we're just kind of, you know, going by somebody's desk and getting into a conversation that we wouldn't have expected to have. So I would just say pick up the phone, do a video call, whatever you're comfortable with. But just ask people on your team how they're doing. And I think we'll get there just by doing that.
That's a great point. That's absolutely wonderful. Okay, well, thank you, Rebecca. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Again, the book is called The Good Culture, The Leader's Guide to Creating a Workplace That Doesn't Suck. And we have lots of work to do ahead of us.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. You are lovely, and I love this podcast. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. This is Linda Popke. Until next time, thank you for listening to Marketing Thought Leadership.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Marketing Thought Leadership, brought to you by L2M Associates. If you'd like to find out how you can improve the return on your investment in marketing programs, processes, or people, contact us at www.l2massociates.com.